a lecture from the collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Education of the Child, which was an essay, and Early Lectures on Education. The lecture is entitled Education and Spiritual Science, given in Berlin, January 24, 1907. When we discuss subjects such as that of today's lecture, we must keep before our mind's eye all of human evolution. Only then can we understand individual evolution and guide young people through education. At the center of education is the school. We shall attempt to understand what is required of education on the basis of human nature and a person's evolution in general. We see the being of a person as consisting of four distinct members: physical body, ether or life body, astral body, and, at the center of one's being, the I, capital. When an individual is born, only the physical body is ready to receive influences from the external world. The ether body is not born until the time that the teeth change, and the astral body is not born until puberty is reached. The faculties of the ether body, such as memory, temperament, and so on, are, until the change of teeth, protected by an etheric sheath, just as the physical senses of eyes and ears are protected before physical birth by the maternal body. During this time, the educator must not disturb what should develop naturally by itself. Jean-Paul expressed it by saying, "No world traveler learns as much on far-flung journeys as the child learns from the nurse before the age of 7. Why, then, must we have schools for children? What evolves after the physical birth has occurred needs a protective covering, just as the embryo needs the maternal body's protection. The human being begins a life that is entirely new after a certain stage of development is reached. Until then, life is a repetition of earlier epochs. The embryo repeats all the primordial stages of evolution up to the present, and after birth, the child repeats earlier human evolutionary epochs." Friedrich August Wolff, footnote, Friedrich August Wolff, 1759 to 1824, German philologist and scholar of classicism, was a friend of Goethe. He contended that the Iliad and Odyssey are the work of more than one author. End of footnote. Friedrich August Wolff described the stages through which a human being evolves from childhood as follows. The first epoch, until the third year, he called the Golden, Gentle, Harmonious Age, corresponding to the life of today's Indian and South Sea Islander. The second epoch, until the sixth year, reflects the Asiatic Wars and their repercussions in Europe and also the Greek Heroic Age, as well as the time of the native North American. The third epoch, until the ninth year, corresponds to the time from Homer to Alexander the Great. Footnote: Homer, 8th or 9th century B.C., Greek poet, traditionally considered the author of the Iliad and the Odyssey. And that's the end of that footnote. Footnote 3 is Alexander III, from 356 to 323 B.C., tutored by Aristotle, conquered many lands and became king from 336 to 323 B.C. He died of fever in Babylon. End of footnote. The fourth epoch, until the 12th year, corresponds to the time of the Roman Empire. The fifth epoch lasts until the 15th year, when the inner forces should be ennobled through religion, and corresponds to the Middle Ages. The sixth epoch, until the 18th year, corresponds to the Renaissance. The seventh epoch lasts until the 21st year, corresponding to the Reformation. And the eighth epoch lasts until the 24th year, when a person reaches the present era. This system is a valuable spiritual foundation, but it must be widened considerably to correspond to reality. It must include all of a human being's evolutionary descent. Human beings do not stem from the animal kingdom, though certainly from beings who were far below what human beings are today in physical development, they did not resemble apes in any way. Spiritual science points back to a time when human beings inhabited Atlantis. Compared to modern human beings, the Atlanteans' soul and spirit were constituted differently. Footnote: see Cosmic Memory. End of footnote. Their consciousness could be called somnambulistic. The intellect was undeveloped. They could neither count nor write, and logical reasoning did not exist for them. But they beheld many aspects of the spiritual world. The will that flowed through their limbs was immensely strong. The higher animals, such as apes, were degenerate descendants of the Atlanteans. Our dream consciousness is a residue of the Atlanteans' normal pictorial consciousness, which could be compared with what a person experiences in vivid dreams during sleep. But the pictures of an Atlantean were animated, more vivid than today's most fertile imagination. Furthermore, Atlanteans could control their pictures so that they were not chaotic. We see an echo of this consciousness when young children play, endowing their toys with pictorial content. Human beings first descended into physical bodies during Lemurian time. That event is repeated during physical birth, when, having descended into a physical body, a person begins to develop through soul and spirit to higher levels. The Lemurian and Atlantean epochs are repeated in a child's development up to the 7th year. The epoch of evolution, when great spiritual teachers appeared among humankind, Buddha, Plato, Pythagoras, Hermes, Moses, Zarathustra, is repeated in the child between the change of teeth and puberty. In those days, the influence of the spiritual world was much greater, a fact we find preserved in heroic legends and sagas. It is therefore important that what is taught during this period of the child's life conveys the spirit of the earlier cultural epochs. The period between the 7th and 14th years corresponds in the child to the time up to the 12th century, the time when cities were founded. The main emphasis must now be on authority and community. The children should experience something of the power and glory that surrounded the early leaders. The most important issue that concerns a school, therefore, is the teacher. The teacher's authority must be self-evident for the children, just as what was taught by the great teachers was self-evident to the human soul. It is bad, it does great harm, if the child doubts the teacher. The child's respect and reverence must be without reservation, so that the teacher's kindness and goodwill, which must be present naturally, seem to the child like a blessing. Pedagogical methods and principles are not what is important, but rather the teacher's profound psychological insight. The study of psychology is the most important subject of a teacher's training. An educator should not be concerned with how the human being ought to develop, but with the reality of how the student actually does develop. Since every age makes different demands, it is useless to lay down general rules. Knowledge or proficiency in pedagogical methods are not what matters in a teacher, but character and a certain presence that makes itself felt even before the teacher has spoken. The educator must have attained a degree of inner development, and must have become not merely learned, but inwardly transformed. The day will come when teachers will not be tested for knowledge or even pedagogical principles, but for what they are as human beings. For children, the school must be their life. Life should not just be portrayed. Former epochs must come to life. The school must create a life of its own, not draw it from outside. Human beings must receive at school what they will not be able to receive later in life. Pictorial and symbolic concepts must be fostered. The teacher must be deeply aware of the truth that everything transient is only appearance. When teachers present a subject pictorially, they should not be thinking it is merely allegory. If teachers fully participate in the life of the children, forces will flow from their soul to that of the children. Processes of nature must be described in rich, imaginative pictures. The spiritual behind the sense perceptible must be brought to life. Modern teaching methods fail completely in this regard, because only the external aspects are described. But a seed contains not only the future plant, it contains forces of the sun, indeed of the whole cosmos. A feeling for nature will awaken in the child when the capacity for imagery is fostered. Plants should not merely be shown and described, but rather the child should make paintings of them. Then happy human beings for whom life has meaning will emerge from their time at school. Calculators should not be used. One must do math with the children on living fingers. Vigorous spiritual forces must be stimulated. Nature study and arithmetic train the powers of thinking and memory, history the life of feeling. A sense for what is noble and beautiful awakens love for what is worthy of love. But what strengthens the will is religion, It must permeate the teaching of every subject. Children will not immediately grasp everything they are capable of absorbing. This is true of everyone. Jean-Paul made the remark that one should listen carefully to the truth spoken by a child, but to have it explained one must turn to his or her parents. In our materialistic age, too little is expected of memory. The child first learns, only later does it understand, and only later still will the underlying laws be understood. Between the 7th and 14th years is also the time to foster the sense for beauty. Through this sense, we grasp symbolic meaning. But most important is that the child is not burdened with abstract concepts. What is taught should have a direct connection with life. The spirit of nature, in other words, the facts themselves existing behind the sense perceptible, must have spoken to the child, who should have a natural appreciation of things before abstract theories are introduced. This should only be done after puberty. There is no need to be concerned that what is learned may be forgotten once school is finished. What matters is that what one teaches bears fruit and forms the character. What the child has inwardly experienced will also be retained. Details may vanish, but the essential, the universal, will remain and grow. No education can be conducted without a religious foundation. School is an illusion without religion. Even Haeckel's Riddle of the Universe contains religion. No theory can ever replace religion, nor can a history of religion. A person of a basically religious disposition who has deep conviction will also be able to convey religion. The spirit that lives in the world also lives in human beings. Teachers must feel that they belong to a spiritual world order from which a task is received. There is a saying, a person's character is formed partly by study and partly by life. But school and education should not be something separate from life. It should be said, rather, that a person's character will be correctly formed when study is also life. The end of the lecture.